So we're studying Genesis. We're in chapter 32. I didn't actually, for some reason, I didn't write down where we ended last week, but I believe we kind of finished question 7 of chapter 32. But we'll just take a look at that. So setting the stage, where are we at? What's happened? Jacob has fled a long time ago. How long ago? 20 years. And now he's on his way back. And he sends out scouts, and his scouts come back, and they tell him, brother's coming, and brother's coming with 400 men. So brother's coming, he's coming with an army. And we mentioned this is larger than the group that Abraham had when he went and rescued Lot from the kings. So this is a sizable group that's coming to meet him. So he comes up with a plan. Why did he leave? Okay. Because he had tricked Esau, and Esau was mad, and Esau was going to kill him. So he had fled, and now he's coming back. Now he sees his brother coming with an army. His natural thought is, uh-oh. So what's his plan? He's going to send gifts. And we talked about what he was going to send. And 200 female, all these animals that are listed on the screen. So he's sending a lot of stuff, right? And how is he going to send it? We mentioned it. Was he going to send it all at once? And droves. And why wasn't he going to send it all at once? I think it was Clayton said because there'd be a stampede. Or was that Levi? One of them said because there would be a stampede if he sent it all. So was that the reason? It gives him more time, and also, if I give you one big gift, or I give you a gift, and a gift, and a gift, and a gift, and what comes with each of those gifts? A message, right? So I think that's the key. The message is being repeated over and over again. And what's the message that he's trying to send to him? What is he emphasizing? I'm your servant, and I've got all this stuff, so I don't need your stuff. And again, we talked about the servant. Why would it be important? Why would he be saying, reiterating, I'm your servant? If you go back, when the blessings happened, what blessing did Jacob get? That Esau would be his servant. And what was Esau told? That you'll be Jacob's servant. But ultimately, you're going to break that yoke. So, if Jacob's heard the breaking the yoke part, he might be thinking, uh-oh, this is it. So anyway, that's why he's sending all these animals, and he's sending them in droves, wave after wave. And they were to be delivered that way. And the purpose, we mentioned his purpose, what's his ultimate goal? To appease him, right? To calm him down, to not get killed. Okay, so that's his plan. So he sends on the presents, and he stays behind. And then that's where we're going to see him having another interaction. So we'll read that, chapter 32. I can find chapter 32. Okay, chapter 32. He rose up that night and took his two wives and his two servants and his 11 sons and crossed over the ford of the Jabbok. He took them and sent them over the stream and sent over that which he had. Jacob was left alone and wrestled with a man there until the breaking of the day. When he saw that he didn't prevail against him, the man touched the hollow of his thigh. And the hollow of Jacob's thigh was strained as he wrestled. The man said, "Let me go, for the day breaks." Jacob said, "I won't let you go unless you bless me." He said to him, "What is your name?" He said, "Jacob." He said, "Your name will no longer be called Jacob, but Israel, for you have fought with God and with men and have prevailed." Jacob asked him, please tell me your name. He said, why is it that you ask what my name is? He blessed him there. Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, for he said, I have seen God face to face, and my life is preserved. The sun rose on him as he passed over Peniel, and he limped because of his thigh. Therefore the children of Israel don't eat the sinew of the hip, which is on the hollow of the thigh, to this day, because he touched the hollow of Jacob's thigh and the sinew of the hip. So now we've got Jacob. He sends everyone over, and he's left alone. And what happens when he's left alone? He goes to sleep. And who interacts with him? So it was interesting. Last week, Cody was here, my nephew, and my parents as well. And they were sitting at the table doing the lesson. And they were talking about, who did he wrestle with? And they said, well, he wrestled with a man. And then later his name gets changed, and they say he wrestled with God. So Cody's like, he wrestled two guys. He wrestled a man, he wrestled God. Is that what happened? Anthony. So Hosea clears it up for us, right? If there's any doubt, Hosea answers it. The Lord has an indictment against Judah and will punish Jacob according to his ways. He will repay him according to his deeds. In the womb, he took his brother by the heel, and in his manhood, he strove with God. He strove with the angel and prevailed. He wept and sought his favor. He met God at Bethel, and there God spoke with us. So If there's any doubt what it's talking about when it says he wrestled, there's a man here, and then it talks about prevailing over God, I think this clears it up. It's an angel. I got to figure out which way I went. Not that way. Okay. So he wrestles with an angel. And who wins the wrestling match? When I first read it, I'm like, it's a stalemate, because they wrestle and nobody wins. But then it kind of goes back and forth, I guess, if in a way. Because when you first look at it, I think stalemate, and then you look and it says, but then you think about the result, what happened with Jacob? His hips messed up, right? So he gets hurt, but the angel can't get loose, so Jacob's holding him. So I'm thinking, okay, it's a stalemate, but it's not. And why is it not a stalemate? Well, one, the verse that I just had up says he prevailed. And who also says he prevailed? The angel saw that he didn't prevail. And he saw he didn't prevail. So there, it looks like there's no prevailing, but in Hosea it says Jacob prevailed. Yeah. So there's this wrestling match. There's a struggle with the angel, and Jacob prevails. Has Jacob interacted had anything like this happen before? Not the wrestling part. Mason. Okay, So at least a couple of times he's interacted, right? There's one where he was, where he slept and he had the rock as his pillow. David's not here, so I'll say pillow. There was that interaction where he had a vision with the angels descending and ascending, doing God's bidding. So there he had an interaction, and then back at, I don't know how to say the word, Mahanaim, or whatever the name is, there he met the host of angels, an army of angels, if you will. So he's seen angels before. He's interacted with them before, and he realized what he was interacting with. So at this time, does he know who is he interacting with? By the end of it? Okay, Anthony. Yeah, I mean, picture yourself being Jacob. You're asleep, and now you're in the middle of a wrestling match. It may have happened to me once with my cousins, but is that something that it seems weird, doesn't it? I mean, it's just abnormal how it. He's left alone and he wrestles. Not was he asleep and got woke up by somebody jumping on him? It doesn't tell. It doesn't tell us anything about the wrestling match other than he wrestles with this man who's an angel. And I think Jacob does at some point realize that there's something different about him because he does hold on for a blessing, right? And kind of like Anthony said, who are you going to ask for a blessing for? Are you going to wrestle me for a blessing? I ain't got nothing to give you, so it ain't going to do you any good. Who do you want a blessing from? Someone greater than you. So I think he realizes there is something special about this man, and that's why he holds out for the blessing. Levi.
Thank you.
And what you said there was the thing that always jumps out at me. How did he win? I mean, how could he hold on to an angel? Because when you think of an angel, I'm thinking one angel could wipe out an army, right? Well, eventually he does, but how did he even hang in there for any period? So the angel was pulling his punches. Scott, did you have your hand up?
Yeah, one clarification question. You mentioned in Stephen several times, I can't find that.
Yeah, right. And I think I said, I don't know if he was asleep. I hope I did. I mean, I intended to say I don't know. Okay. Yeah, I don't know if he was or not. In the previous case, he obviously was. Here, I don't know. Yeah. And if I made that unclear, or I may have misspoke. Thanks. Okay. Mason.
One thing to note is that I think if we're watching a movie, we'd be used to seeing symbolism, but it's at night, and then the sun rises upon it. I'm not going to say for sure that's intentional imagery, but this is a turn in Jeffrey's life, a new name, a new day, so I think maybe it's intentional.
Okay. So they wrestle throughout the night, and it is a new day dawning when the angel puts an end to it. So we have seen a progression from Jacob, right? And earlier in the chapter, we pointed out that he said, "The God of my grandfather, God of my father, you told me." And there he's making a turn because you talked to me. So he's getting a personal relationship in a way. But after this, I think we really see the turn. Scott. So we do have that interaction where the angel asks, "What's your name?" I think the angel probably knows who he's dealing with. I think that probably is because he's going to change it, right? At the end of the match, Jacob asks the angel, "What's his name?" And what's the answer? We don't get one, so he doesn't answer. So it is just it's an interesting interaction here, and as Scott said, there's I can't really picture what happened here. There are more questions than answers. For instance, how did the match start? Was he, you know, going back? Was he asleep? Was he awake? If he's awake, what? Just this guy comes up and they throw down immediately? What happened? We don't know. All we know is he wrestled and he held the angel. I don't know. Put him in a headlock. I have no idea. All it brings back a fond memory. But anyway. When I was little, I was wrestling my friend's older brother, and I put him in a headlock until he cried. And I wouldn't let go because I knew if I let go, I was in trouble. But anyway. Oh, fond memories. But so he won this match, held on until his hip gets hurt, and then he releases him. And what changes as a result? So then we have the interaction where he asks what his name is, and he changes it, right? What does he change his name to? Israel, right? Because he had contended with God. What else changes? The name of the place changes. He calls it Peniel, which is the face of God, because he's met God there. Anything else change? His gait. Okay. It talks about him having a limp now, right? He has a limp. And also their diet changes because they no longer eat the sinew of the thigh that's in the hip socket. So they no longer eat that. So those are the things that changed as a result of this. So we have his name changed here. But if we go ahead a few chapters, his name gets changed. I think it's chapter 36. His name gets changed again from Jacob to Israel. So when we continue reading next chapter, what are we going to see him called? Israel? Jacob. So his name's changed, but it's like he's using both for a time. But anyway, so his name has changed, and these other things. Any other questions, comments that we can't answer, or questions that we can't answer, or comments on the wrestling? Okay. We'll go on to the next chapter. Oops, before we go to the next chapter, you knew this was going to be up here, right? So, timeline. We've done it every week. Where are we at today? 2000. If we go back, what's the next significant event on our timeline? Jesus. And that was approximately 2,000 years ago, zero. Then we have 500 years of silence. And then when we go back further, we have David, and he's around year 1,000. And then the next major milestone we have. Okay. Moses, around 1500. And then we have Abraham. Okay. And that's approximately where our study is right now, right? And then we go back in the next big event, the change of the world, the flood, around 2500, and then back, way back to the beginning, about 6,000 years ago, we had Adam and Eve. So just a reminder where we're at. So we'll read chapter 33. Got too many papers. So Jacob lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, Esau was coming, and with him 400 men. He divided the children between Leah, Rachel, and the two servants. He put the servants and their children in front, Leah and her children after, and Rachel and Joseph at the rear. He himself passed over in front of them, and bowed himself to the ground seven times until he came near to his brother. Esau ran to meet him, embraced him, fell on his neck, kissed him, and they wept. He lifted up his eyes and saw the women and children, and said, "Who are these with you?" He said, "The children whom God has graciously given your servant." Then the servants came near with their children, and they bowed themselves. Leah also and her children came near and bowed themselves. After them, Joseph came near with Rachel, and they bowed themselves. Esau said, "What do you mean by all this company which I met?" Jacob said, "To find favor in the sight of my Lord." Esau said, "I have enough, my brother. Let that which you have be yours." Jacob said, "Please, no. If I have now found favor in your sight, then receive my present at my hand, because I have seen your face, as one sees the face of God, and you were pleased with me. Please take the gift that I brought to you, because God has dealt graciously with me, and because I have enough." He urged him, and he took it. Esau said, "Let us take our journey, and let's go. I will go before you." Jacob said to him, "My lord knows that the children are tender, and that the flocks and herds with me have their young, and if they overdrive them one day, all the flocks will die. Please, Lord, let my Lord pass over before his servant, and I will lead on gently according to the pace of the livestock that are before me and according to the pace of the children until I come to my Lord to see her." Esau said, "Let me now leave with you some of the people who are with me." He said, "Why? Let me find favor in the sight of my Lord." So Esau returned that day on his way to Seir. Jacob traveled to Succoth, built himself a house, and made shelters for his livestock. Therefore the name of the place is called Succoth. Jacob came in peace to the city of Shechem, which is in the land of Canaan, when he came from Paddan Aram, and encamped before the city. He bought the parcel of ground where he had spread his tent at the hand of the children of Hamor, Shechem's father. For 100 pieces of money, he erected an altar there and called it El Elohe Israel. So, Jacob has been fearing this moment. He had all these preparations where he'd sent these flocks, and now he's finally going to meet his brother. But he's still not totally sure, is he? He's not sure what Esau's purpose is, and he's a little hesitant. So when he sees Esau coming, he puts his family in a certain order. How does he order his family? What order are they going to meet Esau? Okay, from least to greatest. So who goes first? The servants. The servants are going to go first. The servants and their children. In Jacob's eyes, who's more expendable? The servants and their children. So I'm going to send them first. And they're going to be in front if Esau does anything, right? Not sending them first, but they're going to be in the front in case Esau decides to do anything. And then, who's going to be next? My ugly wife, or the wife I don't care about as much. And then who's going to be last? My precious wife, Rachel, and my favorite son. So they're going to be at the back of the column, right? And why is he ordered that way? Again, he doesn't know what's going to go down. He doesn't know what's going to happen. So does that ordering make sense from a worldly perspective? Yeah, if I'm gonna test something, okay, I would never do this. But if I were going to do some laundry had some stain or whatever, or I want to test some new laundry, whatever, what am I going to test it on? Don't they give you like a scrap pieces on some things? Or am I imagining that? Scrap piece of material? Maybe I'm imagining that. Guys don't know. But I'm going to use something I don't care about, right? It always tells you that you're like the carpet cleaner. Test it out on an area that you're going to do it in a corner, not in the middle of the floor, right? Why? Because you don't care about that as much. This is what he's doing, right? He's sending a test group, or he's got them ordered. Keep saying he's sending them. He's going to go first, but he's got them ordered in such a way that if something happens, I don't lose the valuable, right? So that's why he has them in that order. He puts them in this order in case something bad happens. Earlier we saw he'd split his camp in case something bad happened, and why did he do that? So that somebody could get away. And now that it's actually approaching, Esau is getting close. He's refining it even more, right, mm-hmm. to make sure that the servants are first. So he has the family all lined up, but who actually goes out and sees Esau? Jacob. Now, is he the first one to see him? No, he sent drove after drove after drove, right? So he sent multiple servants, and we saw all those animals. I don't know that it actually says how many groups he sent. I guess I'd always envisioned that each type of animal was sent. So there were, I forget, however many there were, sheep, cattle, donkeys, camels. But multiple waves, right? Multiple waves. And now he's got his family all lined up, but I think it's interesting that he goes. And when he goes, how does he go? What does he do? He goes first. He meets Esau. And what does he do? Go up, hey, hug him, hey, brother. No, Kurt? Yeah, he bows himself seven times. Okay? Again, that's a number we see a lot, right? But seven times he bows himself until he comes near to his brother. So it's like he's starting off a ways away, and he's continually bowing as he approaches him. And why is he doing that? Again, he's afraid. And he's wanting to show humility. He's wanting to show to honor his brother. He doesn't want to come in riding in like a king, like he's the Lord. What's he trying to do? Bow down to Esau as if Esau is the greater. And I think he's doing that because he's afraid. And he wants to make it right with his brother. So while he's doing this, and he's bowing down, what does Esau do? What's Esau's reaction? Okay, Esau sees him coming. Excuse me. He sees him coming, and he runs to him. Now, if I'm Jacob and I see Esau running, I might be a little afraid too. But we don't know what manner he's running in. But when I think about that, I think of someone else. When we think about the prodigal son, when he left and took out his father's stuff and he wasted it, when he comes back, what does the father do? He runs out to greet him. Why did the father run out to greet him? It's his son. Why does Esau run out to greet him? It's his brother. So we've got Jacob who's afraid, because when he left, brother wants to kill him. And now Esau's coming and he's embracing him. Is that what Jacob expected? What did Jacob expect? I don't think he knew what to expect, but I think he feared the worst. I definitely don't think he expected him to kiss him and embrace him. But that's what Esau did. So does that tell us anything, excuse me, about Esau? So we've been studying about the change that happened in Jacob. Is Jacob the same man coming back as he was when he left? Is Esau the same man now as when Jacob left? From this, it doesn't look like he is. It looks like he has changed as well. Now, there's still lots of bad about Esau. I mean, he's still going to be, his family anyway, still going to be kind of a thorn. But it looks like he's different now. because he rushes out, he embraces him. So it wasn't what he expected. So when I mentioned that Jacob came and he bowed, and then Esau comes out, who then comes in after Jacob meets him? The rest of the family, right? And they come in, and what order do they come in? They're still come in the order that Jacob had put them in. The servants first, then Leah, then Rachel. And what do each of them do when they come in? They bow down as well. So they all bow down to him. So what did what question did Esau have for Jacob? He had a couple of questions. Who are these people? Right? Think about it. If you haven't seen your sibling in 20 years, would you have questions? Probably have a lot of questions, right? But here he just starts out with the obvious. Who are all these people? Because remember, when Jacob left, what did he leave with? The clothing on his back, right? I think he said he had a staff, if I remember right. But he didn't have anything else when he left. And now he's coming back with a large group, right? He's a wealthy man now. If you think about it, he's got two wives, a bunch of children, and flocks. So he asks, who are these, and what's Jacob's response? Anthony? So again, we've talked about the journey Jacob's on. Here he's recognizing God gave me these, right? This is the things that God has given me. But he does has given your servant, right? So I he's still not at ease. You know, yes, he's hugged me, he's kissed me, but I'm still not, I'm your servant, right? He's still throwing that out there. And we're going to see that when they split camps. But anyway, so he says, these are the children that God gave me. So I think he's recognizing it. What's Esau's second question? What's with all the gifts? Why did you give me all these flocks? Why did you send them? Sorry. And if you think about it from Esau's perspective, imagine, we've been looking at Jacob, but imagine you're Esau, and now your brother's sending you a flock and a flock and a flock. What's probably going through Esau's mind? Why is he sending this ahead of him like this? But so he asks, what's with all the gifts? And what does Jacob say? To find favor in the sight of my Lord. So again, he's calling him Lord. He's making Esau greater, and I think he's kind of admitting you might have a reason to be mad at me. So I'm trying to find your favor by sending you these gifts, Anthony.
So I had a question about this.
Just marveling the previous night about having seen the face of God and living.
So when Jacob is, when Esau says that, when Jacob says that, Esau had just told him, keep your stuff, right? Esau just said, keep your gifts. And then Jacob says, please, if I found favor in your sight, take it. And then he does say, receive my present at my hand, because I have seen your face as one sees the face of God, and you were pleased with me. So he is elevating him here. I'm seeing your face. It's so good to see you. It's as if I'm seeing the face of God. It's kind of how I read it. Scott. So looking at looking at Jacob, he views all this stuff as not really his, right? God gave me this. He recognizes that. He gives God credit. Kurt.
And just on what Scott said, that's what Jesus was trying to get across in the Sermon on the Mount. You know, the low, the poor spirit. The humble, those that recognize what they have is by the grace of God.
So now we've got these two brothers. Does Esau need these gifts? We talk about Jacob being blessed, but Esau's been blessed too, right? So Esau's doing fine. So he says, no, I don't want them. You keep them. Does Jacob just say, okay? No, Jacob doesn't say that. He urges him, no, I want you to take this. And eventually Esau does. So Esau takes it. So now we've got a reunion of the brothers, and Esau proposes some travel arrangements. So we've met, and he says, hey, let's go home together, right? I'll go. We can travel together. So Esau says, let's take our journey. Let's go. I'll go before you. So I'll lead you home. And that sounds nice, right? So does Jacob accept it? I put the wrong verse there. So Jacob doesn't accept it. He says no. What's his reasoning? Why does he say no? Okay. So remember, Esau came out. What's Esau traveling with? 400 men. Does it? I don't think it says anything about him traveling with anything else. So if he's traveling with 400 men, possibly 400 warriors, he could probably make pretty good time, couldn't he? And so Jacob's excuse is, I've got all these flocks, I've got little children. But who else has flocks now? Even if Esau came empty-handed, Esau's got flocks too, because Jacob gave them to him. So he may not make as good a time going home as he made there. But regardless, Jacob says no. And the reason he gives is because of the flocks and the children. Do you think that's his only reason for not wanting to go? Mason?
Back to the proper home.
So when we look, oh, Anthony, go ahead.
Well, I guess playing on to this too, in verse 14, Jacob tells Esau to go ahead until I come to my Lord in Seir. But Jacob has no intention of going to Seir. Like, he just lies to his brother here, just saying, like, hey, I'm going to follow behind at a distance, but he really didn't want to be with Esau. But there's still that tension that, like, that hasn't actually been resolved in the
conflict. Yeah. And that's why that's why I asked the question, was that truly his only reason? I don't think so, because of where do the brothers go? So where did the two brothers go? So where do we have Jacob when he sent message, or actually sent scouts ahead? He was at Mahanaim, or however you say that word, right there. So they meet. It doesn't say where they met. But at the end, where does Esau go? You can't really see it, but Seir is right there. Esau's going back to Seir. Where was Jacob from when he left originally? Beersheba. So Esau's going to go from wherever they met down here. Where does Jacob go? He went over here, right? So those are not the same direction. So he is not going, he is not following his brother like he said he was going to. In fact, he's kind of going away from him. So I think he's still afraid. He's still not totally sure what's going on here. But to end the chapter, what do we see him doing? To end the chapter, he buys some ground, and what does he do? He builds an altar there. So we've seen this journey that he's been on, and now he's building an altar. So I think, how should we view that? I think that's a positive thing, right, Scott? So he's saying God is his God, right? Thanks for all the participation. Next week we'll pick up with the story of Dinah.